Welcome to the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm Ben Anderson.
I'm Chandler Holtz.
We are recording this on Tuesday, March 19th. We have, less than 4 weeks left in the regular season. 14 games overall. As always on the Jazz Notes Podcast, we appreciate when you follow us on social media at Ben's Hoops, at Chandler Holt KSL, and read us at kslsports.com. Also follow all your social medias at KSL Sports. That's TikTok, Instagram, X, Twitter, Threads, whatever you look for. We've got you taken care of. YouTube, Facebook, a lot of Jazz coverage posted there. So if you're not following us everywhere, make sure to do that. Like we like to do every week, we'll go back and look at what happened over the last three games, whatever happened over the last 7 days. In this situation, it's four games for the Jazz over the last week. They've been busy. Kind of weekly news. We'll look forward to the week ahead, give some grades out for the last week. Today we'll mix in some standings watch because that's really what's most important. And then the favorite part of the episode, we answer your mailbag questions every Tuesday around 11 o'clock in the morning. I send out a prompt asking for you to send in your Jazz questions of the latest news and notes about the Jazz, and we'll respond to them in the podcast. So we appreciate you doing that. All right, Chandler, what happened over the last week for the Utah Jazz?
Yeah, four-game week for the Jazz, and honestly a pretty predictable one. They lose to the teams at the top of the conference and then get a two-point win over the Atlanta Hawks. Started the week with a 16-point loss to Boston and then ended the week with back-to-back losses to Minnesota, both in the Delta Center. That first game, Tatum had 38, Derek White 24. Honestly, story from the week is Keontae George had a handful of 20-point games. He scored 26 against Boston with a couple of good defenders on him. And then that Atlanta game, it was a close one going into the fourth. Big story there was the Jazz rookies and two-way guys all play considerable minutes and play pretty well. And then first game against Minnesota, 119-100. Anthony Edwards with 31. Sexton leads the Jazz with 22. If you look at the two games against the Timberwolves, I'd say the message here is 16-9 turnovers in the first game, 17-9 in the second game, and then 44-21 points off turnovers in the two games.
Timberwolves did not turn the ball over in the second half yesterday. That's crazy. Yeah. Not turning the ball over at all, and some of that was, you know, they got hurt and they didn't have anyone playing in the front court, so they had a bunch of ball handlers, and ball handlers should take care of the ball well, but considering Lauri Markkanen and Keontae George each had six yesterday, it's a testament to how well the Timberwolves kind of tightened down. They really made sure that they weren't going to make mistakes and beat themselves, and they didn't. The Jazz are pretty prone to beating themselves. I guess the question about the last week, not surprising that they lost the games they did. They beat Atlanta. Some Jazz fans, that was a game because Atlanta has the 10th worst record in the NBA. Jazz have the 9th worst, and it's obviously dependent on whether they're going to keep that top 10 protected pick. Was that good to win that game or bad to win that game? I have an opinion. Do you have a thought on it?
I think that, of course, you want to be one of the worst records in the league right now. You're trying to keep that top 10 pick, right? But looking at the schedule, I know that the Atlanta Hawks have, the sixth hardest remaining schedule and the Jazz have the third. But I think we're at a point where it's pretty likely that the Jazz are going to finish with a worse record than the Hawks, regardless of the outcome of that game.
Yeah, you know what? You got to get some wins. Yeah. I know you want to get losses and improve your draft odds and all that stuff and not give your pick to Oklahoma City this year. It kind of seems like that's where everyone's settled in. Clearly, that's where the Jazz are headed. It doesn't mean you want to lose 17 in a row. Yeah. Like, it's hard on people. It's hard on the coaches. It's hard on the players. It's hard to teach when you're only losing games. People lose focus, lose interest. Fans lose interest. So winning a couple of games here and there is not going to cost you the end of the season. And we'll get into some what the projected final standings are going to be and what kind of the different websites say and why a couple of losses or wins here and there is probably not the end of the world, especially because Atlanta goes on the road and beats the Clippers. You know what I mean? Like, that was crazy. On the road in L.A., they get that win. You're not going to catch Houston. Houston's too good. They're winning a bunch of games in a row right now, so that's not something you need to worry about. I guess if you were concerned about maybe Brooklyn catching you, but I don't think that's going to happen either. Again, we will talk about that more later. I would not panic over the win over the Clippers the win over the Hawks if some Jazz fans were doing that.
No, definitely not. And outside of the next week, I'll mention the next week, you have OKC, Dallas, Houston, and then Dallas again just in the next 7 days. But if you're looking at the rest of the 14 games for the Jazz, they have a game against the Spurs, and that's really the only game that you look at the schedule and say, okay, they should win that one. Not saying they're going to go 1-13, but it's a rough end of the season for the Jazz.
They've got three games against Houston, which I guess if the Jazz were to sweep the Rockets, they could maybe catch them in the standings, but guess what? The Jazz are not going to sweep the Rockets,
no.
Even though the Rockets aren't very good away from home. At least one of those games is in Houston. And then, yeah, if you want to play nobody in that game and bring Jason Preston back and make him the starter, like, you can rig it. you can rig it. And Houston's clearly not all that focused because Houston's pick doesn't belong to them. I think Houston's pick is going to Brooklyn this year in the James Harden trade. So they don't care if they lose games. Mm. And they've got another pick coming to them from another team. So they're going to end up with the top 10 pick, but it doesn't belong to them anyways. Right? So there's weird swaps all over the place. I don't even remember exactly how it goes. Houston's pick is going somewhere, and they've got a pick coming from Brooklyn, is what it is. So it's a mess. We will talk about more of that coming up when we get into some standings. Weekly news from the Utah Jazz.
As you know, Markkanen returned from injury last night. He played a pretty decent game. I'm pretty sure he had 22 points. But the question that I have for you going into the news is, will he play all of the last 14 games barring injury or any unforeseen circumstance, or will he get shut down similar to last year?
He will get shut down.
Okay.
In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the Jazz are like, hey, injury management, tomorrow night, they're not even going to play him.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not reporting that. I'm just saying, knowing how the Jazz have been pretty cautious with him, and he played well, and he was really happy after the game. Not that they lost. He was just really happy to be back on the floor. He wants to play. That's the nice thing about Larry Markkanen. He doesn't want to check out on the season. He does want to be out there. He was happy to be playing again. So that was a good sign that he came back, and I think the Jazz will use him selectively. But yeah, the Jazz have another 3 games and 4-night stretch coming up. Like, I don't think he plays all 3 of those games.
Yeah.
He's got a quad bruise, you know, and you know he played last night and played pretty well, but I think it's about keeping him healthy and going into the offseason as healthy as you can be.
So that's something we will keep an eye on, if Markkanen will play or how many of the last 14 games he will play. Second bit of news, Isaiah Thomas. He's already out of Salt Lake City with the Stars. He signed a 10-day contract with Phoenix. It'll be interesting to see, one, if he plays, how much he plays, and if he can stick in the Suns for his second time around there.
It makes sense because the problem with the Suns is they're trying to play Devin Booker at point guard, and he's not a point guard. And it's really hurt them. And when they made the finals, they had Chris Paul, who was still at that point probably the best true point guard in the NBA. The problem is Isaiah Thomas does exactly what their other 3 best players do, which is score a bunch.
Yes.
Okay, like, do you guys not figure anything out? But then again, like, what are they going to do? They would have killed to have Chris Dunn or somebody on their roster who can, like, make plays and doesn't need the ball. Those guys don't exist. Those guys actually aren't as easy to find as you would think. So I don't even know if he's going to play, right? Like, he hasn't played yet. Maybe you just keep him for the rest of the year and he's fun to have around, but yeah, he doesn't address their issues. The Suns are a mess.
Yeah, I love Isaiah Thomas. I love all Seattle Hoopers. But like you said, even in 2017, when he was in his athletic prime, he was not a good defender. So now he still has that offensive bag, right? He can do a lot, but nothing defensive. Defensive liability, 100%. So I don't see him getting a lot of playing time, but I do like to see him back in the NBA.
I was thrilled that he got back to the NBA. I thought his little Stars, you know, whatever you want to call it, his brief stint here was really fun. I thought that was cool. And maybe he even comes back if he doesn't get another 10-day with the Suns. Maybe he'll come back here. But good for Isaiah Thomas. Fun little brief moment of history with the Utah Jazz and Isaiah Thomas crossing paths ever so briefly.
Real quick, we can talk about the upcoming week. I already mentioned it for a second. The Jazz are going to be in Oklahoma City on Wednesday, in Dallas on Thursday, in Houston on Saturday, and then host the Mavericks next Monday.
I'm seeing 0-4.
Yeah.
I'm seeing 4 straight losses, and that's on top of back-to-back losses, so it's going to be 6 straight for the Jazz. I guess you want to be competitive. And you know what the nice thing is last night? It was a 3-point game going into the fourth quarter, and they have Anthony Edwards, and you do not, and Anthony Edwards is a superstar. But look, I'm going to say the same thing about Oklahoma City. They have Shea, you don't. Dallas has Luka, you don't. Houston doesn't really have that guy, even though shout out to Jalen Green, who was just named Player of the Week in the Western Conference, who really has the bust label like painted all over him. Maybe he's starting to figure it out a little bit, and they really need it because this could have been an offseason where they even decided to like trade him or move on. Him having a big close to the season is helpful for his future. And then again, the Jazz host Dallas next Monday. So 3 games in 4 nights on the road against 2 of the toughest teams in the NBA in Houston, who's really the hottest team. I mean, they've won, 5 straight? I think they might have the longest winning streak in the NBA right now. They're right up there in that conversation. So good for Houston. Going to be a tough week ahead for the Utah Jazz. Let's do our Jazz grades really quick. Usually we take a break before this, but we've got a lot of questions in the mailbag. We'll try and get to those. What we do is we look at the last 4 games for the Jazz, give grades to the veterans, the young players, look at the standings, and then whether or not the week was any fun. Veterans, where do you have your grade?
Veterans. Markkanen returns last night. Sexton has moved back to a bench role, but he's been pretty consistent. He's been in the top 2 scorers for 3 of the last 4 games. Collins, despite getting baptized last night, he had a decent week.
Actually shot the ball well, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go with B-.
I think B- is fair. You got Lowry back. He was up and down. He did score 22 points and grab 12 rebounds. He also turned the ball over 6 times and was only 1 of 5 from 3. Colin Sexton bouncing back is good.
Yes.
I think Colin Sexton finishing the season strong is a helpful thing because I suspect he's going to be on the team going forward. I could be wrong, but I think he's going to be on the team at least next year. And him continuing to play well and shoot 55% from the floor and 47% from 3. Like, guess what? I can probably figure out how to use that guy and his intensity. Jordan Clarkson only plays one game. He's still got that groin injury. I'm curious how much we'll see him the rest of the year. Otherwise, yeah, it was John Collins. He played 3 games, rested one, 50% from the floor, 66% from 3, but did only average 13 points and 7 rebounds. B- is fair. Yep. Collin was really good. Everyone else was just so-so, but you got Lowry back. That's a plus.
Next up, the young guys. I think this is actually an interesting week for grading the young guys because I feel like in the past it's been like, okay, Walker Kessler had a great week. Keontae George struggled. But honestly, you can look at all these games and be like, this young guy played really well in this game, specifically Keontae George. He's been dropping 20 every other night, it feels like. Walker Kessler has played good. Bryce Sensabaugh has looked so much more comfortable, honestly, yep, night and day from his performances earlier in the year. And then you can also mention Micah Potter and Johnny Juzang in the Atlanta game.
Yep.
I'm going to say a B-plus this week for the young guys.
Keontae was good, 21 points a game, which, again, is crazy. He's just kind of – it's just not even, like, noteworthy anymore when he scores 18 yeah. or 20. You're just like, well, yeah, he scores 20 a game. That's what he does. He also handed out 5.5 assists. Problem was almost 4 turnovers a game. Three-point shooting dipped a little bit, back down to 33%. He was well over 40% for a long run there. But also shooting the heck out of the ball from the free throw line, 90%, and getting there 5 times a game. That's a huge plus for his scoring because that way, even when you shoot the three poorly, if you get into the free throw line, you're still efficient. Taylor Hendricks is a good player.
Yep.
You know, he's not shooting the ball great, but he still shoots a lot of threes. I think if he learns like when to get to the paint and how to use some of those closeouts, he'll be better. But love his rebounding, still like his defense a lot. He's growing and he's making good plays. So Taylor Hendricks, I'd give Taylor Hendricks a positive grade, so I think he helps along with Keontae George. Bryce Sensabaugh's shooting's been atrocious.
Yeah.
He did knock down some mid-range jump shots, but still, he's only shooting 35% from the floor. He hit 1-3 yesterday, but had gone 0-14 in his previous 4 games. So his three-point shooting, which had been high and about 40%, has totally abandoned him. And that's probably legs at the end of the NBA season and being tired and kind of hitting the rookie wall a little bit, mentally and physically. Not great there. But yeah, we also got to see Jason Preston play. Micah Potter played. Johnny Juzang had by far the best 2 games of his career. Averaged 13.5 points, shot 62% from the floor and 63% from 3. He's pretty interesting because you can't sign him to another 2-way deal next year.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do with him? That's kind of the big question about Johnny Juzang. Is he good enough to sign somewhere else? He's a borderline NBA player. I mean, mm-hmm. He's right there. And if he shoots this well, he's probably an NBA player. You just got to figure out if you can keep him around. So yeah, I'll give him a B. You know, they weren't great, but the young guys are out there. Nice to see Taylor Hendricks come back from that injury.
Next up, standings. Jazz are all but locked into the 12th seed in the West right now. They're 3.5 games from the 11th seed Rockets. Again, you said if they manage to sweep them somehow, they could maybe take that spot. But they're also 6.5 games from falling back to the 13th seed where the Grizzlies are right now.
Yeah.
And we've gotten to the point where losses are
good.
Good.
And yes, you don't want to lose every game, and you don't want them to all be ugly. So they actually had quite a few games where they went into the fourth quarter and it was close. Even the Boston game, it was like close going into the fourth quarter, and then Jason Tatum took over as he's supposed to do. And same thing with the Minnesota game last night. So I'll actually say I'll also give him a B. I know it's crazy when you go 1-3, but like you got to win. It was a close win. Young players got some valuable experience. That's what you want. You want meaningful reps and still losing games, and they did that.
Next up, fun factor. Not very fun. Honestly, maybe the most fun part of the week was a highlight from Anthony Edwards last
Absolutely.
Night. Honestly, maybe one of the best dunks I've ever seen.
Best dunk I've ever seen in person.
Yeah.
No question about it. Yeah, absolutely evaporated. John Collins, unfortunately. So we'll talk about more. We got a question about it in the mailbag. We'll address it then. But yeah, honestly, like a D+.
Yeah.
Like these games Whoa. Just aren't that exciting to watch. Will Hardy was really unhappy with the team's performance on Saturday. And these were all home games too,
yeah.
You know? So yeah, D+. Pretty miserable to watch.
I agree with that. And even the 2-point win over Atlanta, it did not feel like a 2-point win. Like it didn't seem like a very close competitive game. We're going to take a break. On the other side, we're going to do some standing watch and get into the mailbag. More Jazz Notes coming up next.
Welcome back to the Jazz Notes podcast. Ben Anderson, Chandler Holt. All right, we talked about the standings a little bit in our grades. we can talk about a little bit more here. The Jazz are sitting at 29-39, the ninth worst record in the NBA. They are one game back of the Atlanta Hawks for the 10th seed. And the difference there is if the Jazz end up with the ninth worst record in the NBA by themselves alone, not tied with anybody, they have about a 97% chance of keeping their first round pick, which doesn't mean they couldn't get jumped. One of these teams could jump them, but then the Jazz fall to 10th, and the odds of two teams, 10 through 14, jumping them in the lottery is 3%, basically zero.
Yeah.
Almost certain not to happen. In fact, you have a far higher likelihood you jump into the top four, and actually a far higher likelihood you jump into each one of the top four spots than you do even falling all the way down to 11. So that's the advantage of sticking at number nine versus at number 10. You've only got about an 80% chance of holding onto that pick. There's about a 1 in 5 chance you get leapt. So that's pretty significant. 1 in 5 is, it's not a coin toss, obviously, but it's realistic. It's somewhat within the realm of possibility. 97% chance of keeping your odds. You would much rather have that. So there's a 3% chance the Jazz would fall to 11 if they end up with the ninth worst record, where they are now. A 0.1% chance they would fall to 12, so three teams jump them, not going to happen. But again, the likelihood of jumping up to number one is 4.5. The likelihood of jumping up to number two is 4.8. Number three is 5.2, and number four is 5.7. Well, you add those up, you're 20%. Yeah. I mean, you're by being in the ninth seed, you have the same likelihood of moving up into the top four as if you were to drop to the 10 seed, falling out of the draft completely. That's why this ninth seed actually is pretty valuable for the Utah Jazz. And I guess the good news is if you go and look at all the NBA projected standings, you can use Basketball Reference, you can use team rankings, you can use ESPN's NBA Power Index. Basically, everybody says the Jazz are going to finish with 33 wins. They're going to be a ninth alone. And really, they're probably going to have two or three games of wiggle room with the Atlanta Hawks, and then three games with the Brooklyn Nets, who are going to finish with the eighth worst record.
Yeah, that's actually what I wanted to talk to you about. The Brooklyn Nets right now are 26-42, like you said, three games lower than the Jazz currently. Do you think that there's any chance that the Jazz could potentially get into that eighth spot? I know three games with only 14 left is kind of asking a lot.
It's a lot.
But Brooklyn doesn't have their pick, like you mentioned, so there's no reason for them to try to be losing games right now.
But that's been the case all year, and the problem is they haven't figured it out.
True.
Like, they are a disaster.
Yeah.
They do have the eighth easiest schedule remaining, and as you mentioned, the Jazz have the third toughest. So Brooklyn still has games against Washington, still has games against Detroit, still has two games against Toronto. They're not going to beat Chicago. Chicago's pretty good. And then the question is, can, like, randomly Cam Thomas and Mikal Bridges or Cam Johnson get hot and they beat the Pacers or they beat the 76ers, who actually aren't very good? You know, do they beat the Kings? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. And if the Jazz were to go 1-13 the rest of the way or 2-12 the rest of the way, you only need Brooklyn to win five games.
Yeah, which is not a lot.
That's not undoable.
Yes.
It's more likely, I think, that the Jazz get caught by the Nets than it is the Hawks, because the Jazz are not going to put themselves in a situation to catch the Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth. Is the Jazz are, I don't think, going to test the idea that they could move up to 10th and risk losing that spot. So still very unlikely, because Brooklyn's awful. There are a lot of projections right now that say the Jazz are going to finish with 33, maybe 34 wins. That would be surprising to me. I think it's really likely the Jazz finish with 31, maybe 32, but I don't think they get to 33.
And we're coming up on we're in the last month of the NBA season, so in the next couple episodes, we will preview and look at how the standings are shaping up as it gets closer and closer to the final game. Do you want to get in the mailbag?
Yeah, let's do it. Every Tuesday, about 11 a.m., I send out a prompt asking for your Utah Jazz or NBA mailbag questions, and we like to address them. You send them, and we try to answer them at the end of this podcast.
All right. First up, we have a question from Leo. Do the Jazz really have their number one guy, or do they still have to keep finding it?
Still looking for a number one guy.
Yeah.
I think maybe the best case scenario for the Jazz is Keontae George ends up being better than Lauri Markkanen, which either means Lauri slides to your third best player, which honestly was what a lot of teams have tried to do with him, and he kind of never got there. Maybe he needed to be handed the reins, become a number one guy on a team for a season, like he did with the Jazz next year, and then you kind of push him backwards. And
yep.
Keontae overtakes him, and then you still have 13 draft picks or 16, whatever the Jazz have, 15 draft picks that you can trade to go and get that true number one guy, and then you still have Keontae, and maybe you have, somehow, you've still been able to hold on to Lauri Markkanen. That might be the best design. But also the nice thing is if Keontae ends up being better than Lauri Markkanen, you can use Lowry in a trade, right, as your third best player to try and go get that true number one guy, and then you need someone to step up and be your third best player. Well, it's easier to have someone step up and be your third best player than it is to naturally develop a true number one superstar in the NBA. But to get that true number one superstar in the NBA in a trade, you have to include a really good player, which means you probably have to include a guy like Lowry Markkanen.
Yeah.
That's kind of always been the math problem for the Jazz. But if Keontae leaps him and becomes, you know, this 25-point-per-game scorer, which I don't think is impossible for him by year three, year four, maybe you can move Lowry in that sense. And, you know, I'm not advocating for that, but I can kind of see the strategy working out that way.
No, I totally agree. I think that for a championship-level team, Lowry Markkanen would have to be a number three or a number two option. And I can't remember if I've said this on the pod, but my comparison for him is Kevin Love. Like,
sure.
When Kevin Love was on the Timberwolves, he was the best player, right? Put up 25, 20 games.
But they weren't winning.
They weren't winning, exactly. And then he moves on, wins his ring with the Cavs as the third option. That's what I see in Lowry Markkanen. Next up, from Cam Young, if the goal is to win more next year, which vet under contract is most likely to be moved in a trade to improve the roster?
Those vets being Lowry Markkanen, John Collins, Colin Sexton, and Jordan Clarkson. I would be surprised if Jordan Clarkson's back next year.
I agree.
In all honesty, I think they tried to move him at the deadline. They shaped his contract specifically to be movable with this big $25 million deal, and they thought, okay, if he's averaging 20 points again, he's making $25 million a year, some team will unload a big contract back for the Jazz, and you've got that value there. I don't think they're going to move Lowry. I think John Collins is hard to move.
Yep.
And I think you want to hold on to Colin Sexton at least another year and see what is going on here, because it's a little hard to nail down exactly what Colin Sexton's doing, but he's doing it well, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So just of those four, I think Clarkson is kind of the obvious odd man out there. So I think they move on in that sense from Jordan. Now the question is, can you get something back from Clarkson that actually improves the roster? And it may just be a role player. You know what I mean? It may be somebody who's equal or even lesser value to Clarkson, but does something differently, like is a little bit better defensive player. Because you don't need ball-in-hand score, because now you have that in Colin. You have that in Keontae George. Even Bryce Sensabaugh can do that a little bit. It's what Lowry does. It's even what John Collins does. Like, guys who need the ball but can score a little bit. You just don't need all your players to do that. So
yeah.
Someone could use Jordan Clarkson, and the Jazz could probably use somebody who does something just a little bit differently, even if it's a reserve who only plays 15 minutes a game.
Maybe some defenders.
Defenders. Well, they do need defense.
Yeah.
A lot of defense. So go find defense. That's what you got to get.
Next up from Devin. If the Jazz get some lottery luck and jump into the top three, would you rather use the pick or trade it for a more established player?
I think it's more likely the Jazz trade the pick if they hold on to like nine than if they move into the top three.
Mm-hmm.
You want to take those superstar swings.
Yeah.
And even though this is a quote-unquote bad draft, there's going to be a guy in the top three who you're like, man, if it all clicks, whether that's Sarr, the kid in France, or with a Ryacher or whatever, Zachary that they call him, like the other French kid, like, okay, like if it hits, he's really special.
Yep.
That's what you're looking for. Now, three, I don't know. Four, I don't know. But I think you still hold on to those picks because you so rarely get top three and top four picks, and that's where superstars come from. It's where real high-level players come from. I think you make the pick. If you stay at 10, well, then maybe you do start to say, or 9, well, the 9th pick and a future pick and, you know, maybe the 28th pick this year plus 1 year salaries and a young player is a really good package. And that's where I could see the Jazz being aggressive there. But if you get some luck, you move up into the top three or four, which, again, you got about a 20% chance of doing, I think you make the pick. And I think you say, hey, that's a high upside swing that you're probably not going to get again naturally. It's going to be really hard, I think, again, for the Jazz. Like, maybe they have the appetite to do it. I'm not going to underestimate Danny Ainge, Justin Zanuck, and Ryan Smith's willingness to continue to lose games to try and add top lottery picks if they think that's going to get them closer to a title. But I know Jazz fans don't want to do that.
Yep.
So if you end up with the top four pick and you trade it, I think you either better get a true superstar back right away, Giannis, Luka, Joel Embiid, etc., or you make the pick and you hope for the best.
Yeah. Last question from Don Julio. Was Anthony Edwards' dunk on John Collins a foul or part of the game?
Part of the game.
I agree.
100%. I don't want to take away highlight plays for fouls.
Yeah.
Unless it's egregious, I don't want to take away highlight reel plays for fouls. Especially when it's like a 50-50 foul like that. And you know what? The Jazz probably could have challenged it and didn't. And there was a reason they didn't, because they weren't sure that they were going to get the call right.
Yep.
And yeah, there's the offhand, and that's always a part of it. The athletic motion of dunking the ball in the NBA. I mean, it's not like he pole vaulted off Collins. John jumped.
Yeah.
And got obliterated. Like, that's part of the game. And guess what? Go look at all of John Collins' best dunks historically. Like, he killed Jared Allen, right? I mean, it's like his big one is over Jared Allen. He jumped off Jared Allen, too. Used him as a pole vault and, you know, used him to lift himself up. So that is just part of the game.
Do you remember Blake Griffin's dunk on Perkins when he, like, grabbed... Or, sorry, Mozgov. He grabbed his head.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, part of the game, 100%. However, never seen a player dislocate his finger on someone's eye.
Yeah, that was crazy. In fact, when I first saw it, I thought he... Well, like everyone, they thought they did it on the rim. Yep. And they're like, well, no, it's actually his offhand. And then I thought he had swung through so hard because he doesn't even touch the rim with the hand that he dunked it with because he just threw the ball through. I thought he swung down so hard he hit his own finger and dislocated it. I'm like, well, that's how hard he threw it down. No, he heard it on the way up and then re-heard it on the way down, which is really funny. But give me, personally... dunks over fouls.
Oh, yes, 100%.
Give me the dunk and let it be a complete play versus wiping it away on a 50-50 call because the ref wants to insert himself into the game. Don Julio, I'm not sure that's the answer you were looking for, but that's what I'm going to stand by.
All right, tough four-game week upcoming for the Jazz. We will see you next Tuesday and recap the week and what's next for the Jazz, and we'll keep an eye on the standings as well.
As always, find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. Follow Chandler at ChandlerHoldKSL. Read us at KSLSports.com. We'll be back next Tuesday.